Good morning. This is Dr. Alejandro Badia with another bi-weekly episode of the podcast, Fixing Healthcare from the Trenches. It gives me great pleasure to introduce our guest this week, who's Dr. Joseph Aboud, who I was lucky to spend some time with last week with an amazing course that we will go into later. He's a champion of education and shoulder and elbow surgery in general. Dr. Aboud, to make a brief introduction, is a professor at the Sidney Kimmel Medical College at Thomas Jefferson University, which is in Philadelphia, folks, city of brotherly love. He's also was a senior VP of clinical affairs, did his undergraduate work at St. Joseph's in bio, MD at Georgetown, ortho residency at Penn, then did two separate fellowships, one in orthopedic biomechanics and another in shoulder and elbow surgery. And he continues to really lead that field. And he and two colleagues, Paul Sethi and Rafi Mirzayam, put together a course, a conference 3 years ago called Shoulder 360, which is not only incredibly instructive, but just a fun, engaging course for us surgeons who, you know, often are very stressed. And he'll talk about that. So without further ado, Dr. Joe Aboud, thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Alejandro. Pleasure being on with you. And thank you for having me on this podcast and the wonderful introduction. And hopefully I deserve it after this podcast. So thanks a lot, and look forward to a fun conversation with you.
Well, thank you. Well, the last time I saw Dr. Aboud, we were actually on a boat ride with some of the faculty. And that was amazing that you guys made the time to do that after. I mean, I know I used to run a course for a decade, and I know, and yours is much bigger. So I know how stressful that is. But the fact that you take the time to do that, people, the public doesn't understand that there really isn't remuneration for that, right? Can you go into that and tell people about the importance of these kind of courses?
Sure. You know, it's funny. As you get older, you sort of find yourself becoming more and more passionate about things that you never really thought about when you were younger. And I think a lot of times when you're younger, you're so busy and preoccupied and with other things that you don't explore these things. And had my first opportunity to educate in a course setting formally back in about 2007. I started a little meeting in Philadelphia, and then later in 2011, made it a more regional meeting in Washington, D.C., and it is still in existence, the Mid-Atlantic Shoulder Elbow Society meeting.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
and it gave me my first sort of foray into running a meeting and setting up a nonprofit, how to pick a date, you know, all the logistics of meeting planning, you know, procuring exhibitors, financing it, how to market it, a lot of nuances that I think if you don't love it, which I think you and I both share the same passion for loving education, you wouldn't do it. So, you know, I did it soup to nuts with my partner back then, Jack Kazanjian, the first year. And then we brought on two partners and then some professionals for meeting exhibits, et cetera. And after doing that for a while and being involved with other meetings, Rafi Mirzayam and I did a course in Vegas together for a couple of years. And we really thought that your area, South Florida, South Beach, Miami, was an underutilized area for particularly shoulder education. And we thought it was a great place. And April, May timeframe was a fantastic time. So we bit from the apple, as they say, and took a big chunk and tried to see if we could make it work. And in our third year, we've been progressively getting, I think, better at doing it, more organized, bigger turnout. And, you know, we've had a great partner with Paul Sethi. And so we have very different, I think, perspectives, which is great. We work together very well. We complement each other's strengths and weaknesses very well. And we're able to be creative and bring thought leaders from around the world and really create an atmosphere where people really enjoy educating and being educated. And, you know, it's not only a cost to us in the sense that we spend time planning this and it's a nonprofit. So you really as a chair or member of the board can't be remunerated for it. But also it's a cost for our faculty and our attendees. And we recognize that. And we know in this day and age, in 2024, part of the reason you have this podcast is the problems with healthcare. Taking time off is very costly from the perspective of overhead, from a perspective of your take home salary. And, you know, taking time to plan a talk or give a talk and spend 3 days at a meeting, it should be worth it. And you want to make sure that your attendees and your faculty, your attendees and industry have a strong return on investment. And that's what we've tried to do. Are able to generate revenue wise, we want to reinvest in our attendees, our faculty, our industry sponsors. So they really have a great educational environment, because in this day and age, people just like TikTok and Instagram, they want educatable moments or minutes. They don't want, you know, didactic 20-minute lectures
right.
running on forever. That's just boring. And they also want discussion. They want you to make a point, and then they want somebody to argue that point so they understand, okay, what are the pros and cons of the position you're taking?
That's a great description. It's the public, I think, doesn't realize. I travel a lot for meetings, and the question, you know, from my kind of banking friends and you know, friends in the legal world is, well, what are they paying you for that? Or I'm like, people are always surprised when I tell them that most physicians do this. It's just part of our DNA. And I certainly the payers and a lot of the healthcare megapolis, I don't think recognizes that. We continue to do it. And I hope for the public's sake, for our patients, that we continue. But I know after last weekend, my shoulder knowledge, you know, I mean, increase another order of magnitude. And you're being quite modest about the participants. But I mean, you had some of the thought leaders from France there, right? From Italy, from Brazil, from so many countries.
Yes.
And they all, you know, travel a long distance for your conference. That's an amazing testament to it.
Yeah, no, we're honored and privileged with the colleagues and friends that came from, like you mentioned, those countries in Germany and Switzerland. So it's really, at this point, we've hit five continents as far as participants coming. We had as far as from India coming over. So it was really an awesome gathering of people. And, you know, I just think to myself that, sure, I could stay in the office every day, all day, and see patients and take care of patients, which is very noble. But I would also think that my knowledge base wouldn't expand. My understanding of why new techniques are being introduced and the pros and cons of them wouldn't expand. And I don't think I'd be as good of a provider to my patients. So I think it's a huge investment in our patients keeps you fresh and on the cutting edge, which, I think for any provider is very important for the quality.
So before we go into sort of the broader healthcare system issues that we're going to discuss briefly, but I do want to point out that your colleagues in Shoulder 360 come from very different. I mean, you are in a real academic center, right? And yet, Paul Sethi is kind of more like me. I mean, he's in private practice, does most of his shoulders in an outpatient surgery center. And then you've got Rafi Mirzayan, who's with a big, you know, prepaid, you know, with Kaiser Permanente, which is the largest medical group in the country, and he's out in California. So you have three different healthcare scenarios of how to provide care all coming together. And yes. I think that's amazing.
Yeah, different perspectives. So, you know, I'm employed by Rothman Orthopedics. I'm actually a shareholder in Rothman Orthopedics, but we are the primary teaching residency for Thomas Jefferson University. So we have all the Thomas Jefferson University medical students, residents, fellows. And so essentially we function as an academic institution medical center. You know, we have residents and fellows in our clinics, in our offices, in our ORs. And to be honest, it's a very important aspect of what I love doing. I love the engagement with young people, especially people taking gap years in medical school to, you know, shore up their CV and do research. So
research, yeah.
I love the research aspect of things. And, I think that's definitely something that I'm passionate about. I have a research meeting every Saturday at 9 a.m. And I can tell you, hour for hour, professionally, that's my favorite hour of the week, because we draw people from not just our institutions, but across the country who zoom in as early as California time and sometimes even from India to sort of get on the call, talk about ideas and things we're doing and, you know, how to get people involved. And so, some of the best ideas come from the youngest minds. So It's really a lot of fun. And again, it's not something that you get remunerated for, but honestly, the remuneration is the card of gratitude a year or two later when they either match in a residency or finish their residency or finish their fellowship and get the job that they wanted. And that's the exciting part.
Right. Publish a paper, right? Present. So let's talk about these challenges, right? So you're going to come from the perspective of that type of academic medical center and teaching. Give me three initiatives that you think would help fix healthcare in the U.S.
Sure. So I'm in Philadelphia County, and we have the distinction, Alejandro. I don't know if you know this.
I do.
We are the greatest area for litigation in the country.
I know it.
We surpassed Cook County, and we just had a jury verdict at University of Pennsylvania for an OBGYN case for $187 million. If you are named in a lawsuit in Philadelphia County, your attorney will advise you, and I've unfortunately had that experience once in my career, to settle because you don't want to take the risk of being in court and having a jury play monopoly with your professional life.
A jury not of your peers. So I'm in Miami, and when there's a merit, and I'm going through this now with a boat issue, okay? Maritime law, it is a panel like, in ancient Rome where, wise people who know that area, we still allow people who really know nothing about medicine to make these kind of decisions. And I'm a fan of the American jurisprudence system for the most part, but in this case, something's got to change, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's almost a lottery system. Yeah. I mean, I hate to say it, but sometimes, people see it as a blessing to have something go wrong because they almost get a lottery ticket because, settlements can easily, we had another aspect I want to talk about is professional team coverage and indemnification, because we had a settlement with the Philadelphia Eagles special teams player that the sum of the settlement was partly divvied up with different groups, but it was a total of $47 million settlement for a knee injury of a 35-year-old special teams player. And, I'm not discounting injuries to people and pain and suffering, but there has to be a limit. You can't have people performing procedures that are, let's say, remunerated $1,000, $1,500, and then the verdict can be in the tens of millions of dollars. It's just not feasible to practice medicine. And, Pennsylvania was getting better. When I finished my residency, it was terrible, and there was a bleeding of neurosurgeons, OBGYNs out of the state. And then it got better for about 5 to 10 years, and now it's getting much worse. Wow. And I practice only in Philadelphia County. And you could, if you're in our practice, and we have an office in Orlando now, you can have the potential trial, because our home base is Philadelphia, the venue changed to Philadelphia County, so you can ensure a better settlement, which is, crazy and ridiculous. And if you don't think that's costing everyone in society a lot of money, you're not really listening to what's going on. You think it's not your
fault. It affects all of us. So I'm going to take a moment to just do a shameless plug for my book. So the one chapter that my colleagues literally jumped over each other to contribute to was chapter 11 on medical malpractice. And two of the surgeons who have incredible stories, I mean, you got to read this, are from Philadelphia. So I am very well aware of the problems you have there. So that's one thing we've got to fix, right? So problem number two.
Problem number two, I think, might get fixed, which is exciting. I think much like our legal experts and lawyers don't have non-competes, our non-competes, I think, might go away. I think the FTC, found in favor of that recently, and obviously there'll be appeals about that. But, I'm a firm believer that you should be where you want to be, and you shouldn't have anybody that doesn't want to be where they are. And so I think that if you've done a good job in building a practice or a institution or a health system, people shouldn't want to leave. They should want to stay. And if they do want to leave, it's probably partially your fault, and they shouldn't be restricted. And the patients shouldn't have to suffer, because they've obviously invested in that provider specifically. And if they're a provider that can have patients follow them, then the more power to them. If the provider is attaining patient volume because of the name of the institution, those patients aren't going to go anywhere. So I think The whole non-compete thing is archaic, and I've actually had to fight that once in my life when I left another practice, and it was very costly and stressful. It really did bungle my patient care because ultimately I was able to break the non-compete and practice in the area, but the practice was not very helpful in making sure I was able to continue the continuity of care and paperwork of my patients. So a lot of times in that first 6 months, I had to sort of piece together the history again to figure out exactly what I was doing in the continuity of their care. So that's a big deal.
That's a good one. Thanks for bringing that up, because that's coming up now. I will tell you, one of my healthcare lawyers here in Florida thinks that it will not go through, thinks that appeal will. So we will see. I hope you're right. I mean, there's pros and cons to everything, but I agree that the cons outweigh the pros. Okay, so number three.
So number three I alluded to earlier, as far as, you know, if you're covering a sports team, okay, at this point, not only are you paying something, in our case, I think we pay somewhere in the range of around $2 million, at least our recent contract was $2 million a year to cover the Philadelphia Eagles, but we're not indemnified either. So we have to put up our personal policies if there is a malpractice claim. And these are not, normal civilians. These are people that are making somewhere in the range of sometimes like our quarterback, somewhere in the range of $40, $50 million. And if you're operating on them, you're playing Russian roulette. So I don't think any practice can withstand that. And, you know, unfortunately now we have become the only remaining orthopedic private practice in the Philadelphia area. Every other practice is either allied with the health system, been bought by a health system, or by private equity. And, you know, that's not good for competition. And, you know, I think what's happening is, you know, and I think the layperson doesn't understand this, but physicians and hospitals aren't necessarily always allied in the same purpose. And so what it's creating is it's creating a monopoly where physicians are told or practices are told they have to abide by stark regulations, but hospitals are oftentimes putting significant pressure on their providers to refer within. So if they know you're the best upper extremity surgeon to see, but you're not part of their system, they'll say, why did you refer out to Dr. Badia? You should have referred to our doctor. Right. Well, the patient wanted this, or the patient wanted this type of expert. No, you should have kept it here. You should have done the CT here, the MRI here, the procedure here. I don't understand why we're held to such a standard, but yet health systems hide behind this. We're a non-for-profit hospital. We can refer within. I think that's a double standard. And I think, again, that's going to drive up costs. And, you know, I can go on and on. I mean, you can
I mean, those are three great. I almost want to change one of my three now that you brought up the nonprofit. I mean, the big gorilla here in Miami is a healthcare system that is not for profit. I mean, they're one of the most expensive in the country. There's some very good hospitals within it, no question, but it really drives up the overall cost of care. And the public is good. Unfortunately, the media has a lot to blame here. They just don't take an interest in this. Seems like they're not willing to even be educated. So here we have to do these podcasts and hope that we get enough viewers, but I'm not Joe Rogan, nor is Scott Sigmund and others, Robbie Pearl and people trying to do something, but you bring up some great points. So I'm going to quickly give my three. First one is we need oversight, not authorization. Authorization is a terrible term where somebody at a desk is literally approving Dr. Raboud to do a rift shoulder replacement when we just had all these world's experts discussing it. And the person making these decisions doesn't know anything about it. All that does is put a cogwheel in the system and cost, because that person has a salary and benefits. So they're not adding anything, but we do need oversight because, you know, all of us we're human. We may make a mistake or there are overutilizers. So we do need oversight. Number two is there's so much knowledge now, right specialist at the right time. That saves a lot of money. Let's not overburden our primary care doctors who are trying to keep us healthy, managing chronic illness and making them see a patient because the insurance says you have to, you know, go see Dr. So-and-so with shoulder pain before you can go to Dr. Raboud or myself. And the last one is what we're doing right here, Dr. Raboud, is public education. And the biggest challenge, honestly, is just getting people to pay attention because it's out there. There are other podcasts. There's multiple books that I read in, to prepare for mine. And if the public finally took some interest in this issue, I think we can get healthcare down from 20% of our GDP now, twice as expensive as the next country on the list, down to something more reasonable. And in an election year, gosh, I wish we could hear more about healthcare, common sense reform. I'll give you the last word, Joe.
Well, no, I love your 3 points, you know, oversight, right specialist, and education. I think those are really important. And I think that, applause to you for going the extra mile to spend this time by educating the consumer out there. And hopefully we make a difference gradually over time. And I think, you know, healthcare in the election cycle used to be a bigger sort of point for the debates. Now it's kind of, become more personal badgering and attacks on each other. There's
not constructive.
Lack of interest in sort of the cost of healthcare and those things. So you're absolutely right. You know, 15, 20 years ago, it would be at least one or two questions during a debate. We'll have to see if they even have debates this fall.
Well, they're promising it now for next month, but I hope healthcare is brought up. And the solution is not insuring more people. The solution is changing how we deliver healthcare. That's where the money is going to be saved. And we'll have so much in the potty for the less fortunate. There has to be a safety net in healthcare. I think most physicians would agree with that. But right now, it's so much money going to the middlemen that it is just not enough for everybody in society. Let's work together. Thank you so much, Dr. Buddha. I appreciate your time.
Well, Andrew, thank you so much for having me. You are a remarkable man and a very kind and generous man and an excellent physician. Thank you for everything.
Thank you so much. Till 2 weeks from now, folks, please tell colleagues, friends, the public about this, and let's get some dialogue going. Till the next one. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it.